Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your favorite podcast, only use onomatopoeias of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Big old freak, huh? Big booty, big old tree. I'ma make him wait for the cook. Wait, hit his knee, big old ski. Hey, feet on the bed. Hey, I mess him up in the head. Kiss it, then look in his eyes. Then the next day, I might leave him on red. Hey, pop it, huh? Daydreaming by hot rocket, huh? He hit my phone with a horse, so I know that me come over and ride it. Right. I'm on the way, huh? Ride on that thing, I'm like, hey, usually I like to cut, but tonight we gon' make luck cause you play. Nobody know, I be with him on the low. We never show up together, but I text him when I'm ready to go. Hey, I had a couple of shots at the bar. I'm finna play with that thing in the car. I got him swerving and breaking the law. Leaves went on tennis, so nobody saw. Ain't nobody crisp like me. Nope. Get what you need like me. Nope. Ain't nobody got a funny tip toes and roll to the tip like.
Ooh, hotties on deck. I know, and it's in a nice way, in a safe way. It's Megan Thee Stallion. It's Fever. Fever is out, and it is quite a thing to listen to and behold. So a couple things about Megan before we start today. Megan is very much kind of a rapper in the old mold, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but she's the kind of rapper that people of my generation complain don't exist anymore. But they do exist, and she proves that. There's going to be a lot of bleeping on this episode because Megan has some dirty words. Some real uncut era, joke of the bail bondsman, Black Jesus. If BET ever puts uncut back on the air, maybe Megan can be the host. A lot of energy around Megan Thee Stallion right now. A lot of energy in the booth right now. A lot of fire in the booth.
Hey.
We got a dream team. Seriously. First of all, it's Hannah Georges, staff writer at The Atlantic.
Hey.
First time on podcast.
Yeah.
Also first time on podcast, it's Hunter Harris, poet laureate of Twitter and staff writer of Vulture.
Hi.
Preferably in that order, I think.
Don't blow up my spot. Come on.
That's like saying don't blow up a volcano. It's going to happen. It's immaterial. I have no control over it whatsoever. Both of my guests today have written about Megan Thee Stallion. Hannah reviewed the record. Hunter spoke with her. And so we're going to talk about the album. We're going to talk about her backstory. And we're going to talk a little bit about the broader what's happening with female rappers right now. Hannah, why don't you start us off with a little bit about the album?
It's 14 tracks, super compact, just like machine gun darts.
Real talk.
Just start to finish.
Rat-tat-tat.
Exactly. And also, I mean, Megan comes in and sort of does her real bold, cocky missives, beginning with Realer, right? The first thing she says is, I don't want to talk. Like, meet me at the bank.
Ooh.
But you know what? Yes. So she starts off on that note and then ends. She caps it with the Run Up freestyle, which she had done previously on Fire in the Booth, actually. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of start to finish this tremendously intense, rapid-fire, acrobatic missive.
Now, it's important we sort of contextualize her as a rapper, right?
Yeah.
And this is something that I've seen her talk about a little bit. I think in the last 3 or 4 years especially, we've become really acclimated to rapping that sounds a lot like singing. We've become really acclimated to high-pitched stuff, very compressed or kind of almost like postmodern rapping, like impressionist rapping. That is not what Megan Thee Stallion does.
No.
She got bars.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just feel like I have, like, the ghost of Funk Flex should be, like, above me right now. Just, like, pressing the bomb button, like, every time we talk about her. And that's not something that we get a lot of, forget male rappers, just at all. It's just not a thing that's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, one of the many reasons that she's, like, a real jolt is people are like, oh.
Spin. Every line is great.
Yeah.
And which is, like, every line makes me blush and gasp at the same time. I'm like, oh. And again.
Megan has this really great sort of staccato delivery, right, where you, like, feel her hit every bar. And there's sort of no word misplaced. There's no flow that's, like, lazy or slushy or just sounding, like, off or there, you know, for the hell of it.
Right, like an afterthought. There are no afterthoughts.
No, not a single after. Everything is precise.
Right. And I think when you read about her backstory, some of that becomes very clear. Like, you know, her mother, who recently passed away, her mother was a rapper. She would just watch, Megan, that is, would just watch freestyle tapes of just people freestyling and sort of learn that, hey, this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to have bars. Like, you're supposed to. So it's strange because I think there's been an interesting thing happening in hip hop in the last 5 years where you have a lot of young kids who are like, I've never listened to Jay-Z, you know, like Lil Yachty being like, I've never heard a Biggie Small song or whatever. But here you have someone who's very clearly raised on that stuff, on the lineage, but in a more Southern framework, UGK, I presume, Ghetto Boys, 8-Ball and MJG, things like that.
Something I think about when I think about Megan all the time is, I think it was a video for Complex with her mom, Holly, who was listening to her rap, and her mom's like, oh, you fell off at that one syllable. Mm. And it's like, that's how precise her talent is and how precise her delivery is. She's sort of aware, you know, hyper aware of everything that's happening whenever she's rapping. And I really appreciate that precision.
Right. And you can tell very much that she's a student of her craft, right? And
yes.
A student of the history. And I think so often when people talk about female rappers, it's about everything surrounding them and rarely the craft itself. So that was such a great glimpse at like how she goes into thinking about delivery and flow and the way that stuff just comes out of her mouth.
And also like rapping as craft.
Right.
Which is
right.
Something, this is where like I feel like the oldest person sometimes in the room, where I was like, there was a time when you worked hard on your rapping before anybody heard you rapping, as opposed to the first thing you've ever rapped becoming the number one song in the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's weird. That happened. That was a real thing that happened. Yeah. Now, I'm flexible and I like both ways. That's fine. But it is striking reading the profiles, reading your interview with her, Hunter, and also reading Lawrence's interview with her in the Fader, how much it reminded me of like profiles I wrote in like 2000 or 2002, where I was like, oh, the same narrative arc is there. Whereas when I'm interviewing a lot of young rappers now, the narrative arc is completely different. It's just kind of like,
right.
Threw something on the internet. Yeah. Lols.
Right. Here Megan did not fall into rap. You know, she was sort of groomed by it, raised in it, et cetera.
I think it's interesting how aware she is of that style of people just falling into it and not really taking the time to be as intentional with their process, and that she doesn't feel the need to be peer pressured into that.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it.
Should we listen to another song? Well, we actually didn't listen technically to anything off of Fever, so let's listen to something. And I should stipulate up front, we have clean versions of these songs, and it's probably messy because Megan's got a dirty mouth. So let's just keep our fingers crossed and listen to Pimpin'?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's listen to Pimpin' and we'll just pray on it.
Damn, I want some, but I chose the dough instead. I could never, ever let a nigga f*** me out my bread. Ain't no nigga alive that could make me lose my mind. Every that done dry, still be crying on my time. Hey, lick, 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 lick. This is not about your dick. These are simply just instructions on how you should treat my. Hey, gotta get my say. Gotta make that shake. Gotta swipe the nigga across so much they had to call the bank.
Stick 'em up, raise 'em up, raise 'em up. Drop it off.
So we just played Pimpin', but I also did want to acknowledge the songs before Pimpin' on the album, which is Hood Rat, Hood Rat Bleep, which samples the very famous viral news clip from many, many, many years ago. 2008 is how long ago it was.
Letarian Milton.
Letarian Milton is not your typical 7-year-old.
I want to do it because it's fun. It's fun to do bad things. To drive into a car.
So did you know that you could perhaps kill somebody?
Yes, but I wanted to do hood rat stuff with my friends.
That's where Letarian...
Relatable is.
Thank you for your service.
Today.
Listen, just here to do some journalism.
Yes. I appreciate that. Facts only on podcast. Strong factual representation. Yes, I'm very partial to that song because not only does she sample it, but some people would sample it and be like kind of a throwaway, like, we did that. That's funny. But she actually like turns it into the
premise of the song.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
it's her thesis.
Exactly. Right. Summa cum laude. You did that. You guys, I assume, were both into Tina Snow.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah,
Tina Snow is the previous tape that came out last year. Tina Snow is one of Megan's aliases. Tina Snow is also like a riff on Tony Snow, which is Pimp C, R.I.P. of UGK. Right.
Huge influence of hers.
To me, Tina Snow was good but incomplete. And I felt like it showed a lot of promise. And I feel like, to me, Fever really brings the whole thing together. Coherent ideologically, music makes sense together. Tina Snow still felt a little piecemeal. That's not to knock it at all. It's just it felt a little piecemeal to me. What was your guys' vibes on that record?
I think that's what I liked about Tina Snow a lot. It was a lot of different sides of the same artist. Cognac Queen.
Yes.
That is an anthem. Oh, my gosh. But it's so different than Big Ol' Freak and so different than like some other stuff on that mixtape. But the stuff with Fever, it is so consistent. It's so, like you said darts. Like every song is, I mean, I feel like I should apologize to her. Like, I'm so sorry that I'm not, like, I'm the hottie I should be.
No, but she wouldn't want that, right?
Did you guys, did you guys get the hottie promo pack with the hottie gear?
I didn't Oh, yes.
I didn't get it.
Oh, no. Wow.
I was very disappointed. Very rarely do I get bent out of shape by not receiving promotional
it's
items.
It's okay. You're not a hottie. It's okay.
Well, what about me?
You don't come on podcast and tell you me I'm get not a hottie.
Listen, we'll share custody of mine.
Okay, oh, my Lord. Thank you.
You are a hottie.
I'm the only person here who qualifies as a stallion also. So,
listen, I'm a pony. Leave me alone.
I just want to say, be the hottie you wish to see in the world.
Okay.
And I know what I see when I look in the mirror. That's all I'm saying. Like, however y'all want to, y'all work with it. But, like, I know what I see.
Touché. No, I mean, I think I agree with the assessment that Fever feels more cohesive, right? It feels more refined. For me, I think the distinctive quality about it is that Tina Snow, for me, felt like her looking in the mirror a little bit and the different sides of herself in the mirror, whereas Fever feels like an invitation to more people. And it feels like sort of the difference between when you're getting ready in the mirror by yourself and when, like, your girls show up and you guys start dancing together. This feels like the difference between Tina Snow and Fever for me.
Definitely, especially because there's so many songs on Fever that I think you wrote this that demand that require you twerk.
I did. Thanks.
Yeah, no, but that's like one of the smartest things I read about this album because every song really does feel that way.
I mean, Simon Says. Where?
Listen, my knees to not bring it up hurt to Simon Says just bringing it up. I'm like having.
I'm
listen,
the youngest person in the room. Knees already feeling hurt.
I am like the Tin Man to like put some oil down there.
Let's listen to Simon Says real quickly. This is from Fever, and this features fellow foul mouth Juicy J.
Simon says, put your hands on your hips, huh? Simon says, put your hands on your knees, hey. Simon says, put your hands on your feet, hey. Simon says, bust it open like a freak, hey. Simon says, put your hands on your hips, yeah. Simon says, put your hands on your knees, hey. Simon says, put your hands on your feet, hey. Simon says, bust it open like a freak, hey. Left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, left, right, left, right, left. And they going through your safe. Hands on your knees, knees bust it back. Ay. Through the tights, you can see the seat is fat. Ay. Through the pockets, I can see a back. Ay. I'm a money making, no cap. Ay. Hot as out, but you already knew that. Even if I bought them.
I will say something that's striking about this song. And obviously, there's only two songs that have guests on this record. Simon Says and Cash ... bleep.
Having to be clean is exhausting.
Yeah. This is
not what Megan
wants. Very draining. Like, this is gonna be very draining. So yes, it's right. It's not at all. No, this is we can do better for her. We can do better for her.
That's why you're not a hottie right there.
Just drenched today. Men rapping about sex has been tiresome for an astonishingly long time.
Yes.
The tropes are terrible.
Yes.
The lyrics are bad.
Uninventive.
And awkward.
Boring.
Like, difficult to
dull.
Listen to.
That's
anatomically
the worst.
Questionable.
Dull.
True story. However, I will say, when I heard DaBaby's verse, yeah.
Have you seen that video of those two girls?
Yes, on
like,
Twitter.
They're like truly sitting in a dorm with satin
listening?
Bonnets on.
Yeah.
And they have like, one of them has, I have, both of them have wine in their hands and their eyebrows go high, like to the sky high. They're like, oh my goodness.
Correct.
That song took my breath away.
It's interesting how, in a way, Megan made it safe for him to rap about that subject matter in that fashion.
Yes.
In a way that if that had just come on his album, maybe we would have been like, I don't
right.
do that.
Yeah. Because it ends and then it's back to her.
It right. really just exactly. punctuates her stuff.
Exactly.
How explicit she is.
But you can tell, right, and he's having fun, but it's not his party.
Right. Exactly. He's definitely supporting actor. And you
exactly.
know what? Give him the Oscar.
When I wrote this song for Vulture, I was like, it doesn't even matter what he's saying because she's so good. I mean, and his verse is nice, but listen, he can't compete where he does not compare.
Her voice is doing great things, but yeah. The truth remains the
it's
truth.
It's Megan's song.
It is. It still is.
Pedro, let's play whatever bits and pieces that you can play of Cash Bleep. Again, we're all going to hell.
My stylist's worst nightmare.
Hey, he say you all about money. Yeah, I'm on that cash.
You know how they love me? Why? Because baby don't give a f- what you do. I be fixing the weed while she sucking my d- pull it out, then I I cut from the back and she nasty, killing her. No, I give it up.
Yeah, yeah.
I be cool on the bitch, ain't no pressure. Till I met this little freak, her name Maggie. Then the thing is a style. Look how she walk, look how she talk, she sexy. I like when they pretty and ghetto. Type of bitch that don't even say hello. And whenever we f- she be fucking me back. Put her in the headlight with my elbow. Now she done reversed. Got a bone and can ride this sh- like a Camaro.
I can't be f- with, no, no, you can't touch this. Hey, we try to rich, my money thick, thick. Walk with a limp, limp.
Let's talk a little bit about the broader context of what's happening with women in rap right now. I feel like there were, certainly in my early era, there was like constant struggle of just like, it's one, it's two,
right.
it's only one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was tiresome. It was very, very challenging to navigate. And that has been completely exploded in the last 2 or 3 years. But I also think that what Cardi did from a subject matter perspective also kind of like radically kind of like shook up and recontextualized everything.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to Megan, you've obviously got City Girls. You've got the various dolls.
Right.
you
so got Sweetie.
Yes.
Yeah, there's Nasty, Tierra Whack.
So tell me a little bit about what you guys see in the bigger picture there.
I think there's still a little bit of the tiresome thing, right? Like, I saw, like, Fever dropped, and I did still see, like, Cardi, like, watch out. And it's the sort of same uninventive. Like,
right.
I think from fans and sometimes from...
Delete your Twitter, just FYI.
Right.
Just, like, delete Twitter. That's
a terrible place.
Great. Not you, Hunter. You stand. Hunter stays
They're
going to
kick me off again.
The only person allowed on Twitter.
Yeah, it's like you're going to be the last person on Twitter.
No, but people are sort of still doing a little bit of that, or I think in some criticism compares Megan exclusively to Trina, which sort of again shows a kind of like failure of imagination,
sure.
failure to conceive of this woman's art and this woman's craft within histories outside of just her femaleness. So there's still a little bit of that, I think, but it's exciting to see Megan in particular embracing other artists, right? Like she's always posting pictures with like Malibu Mitch mm-hmm. and like just all her folks out there. And so I don't know, she seems as excited about this moment as people are about her.
I think it was Clover Hope for Jezebel brought up that a lot of what Megan benefits from is stuff that was really established, not established, but kind of codified by Nicki Minaj and Cardi B to some extent, where we don't expect her to, like, I don't know, fuss with other rappers in the same way that maybe we did 5 years ago,
yeah.
which I really appreciate. But a bar that she returns to a lot is that she doesn't have a male co-signer, which I think is really interesting
yes.
mm-hmm.
because that's something that was, you know, the norm for so long. And she definitely is using her own agency. She is Megan Thee Stallion, built by Megan Thee Stallion. That's her entire brand as like a solo piece of this, you know, industry, I guess. And I like that that is like a status symbol for her, that she is only herself.
One of the challenges that I think is going to be revealing itself in the next 6 months or a year or whatever, and it's actually not dissimilar to something that happens in country music, which is there are only but so many radio stations and programmers and so on and so forth, and there are on the internet, it's like she can be as famous as
right.
anybody
right.
but
mm-hmm.
once you kind of like try to get into those more mainstream, more centrist spaces, it's really just controlled by a limited number of people
right.
and there are historically not as many spots for women on rap radio. And again, same problem in country. This is something mm-hmm. that's persistent. And the thing that I'm probably most intrigued about is I can probably identify 30, 40, 50 women who are rapping, doing tremendous music. And then you listen to the radio and it's like another PNB rock song. Like, is this,
oh God.
Can we not do better? Can we not do better than this?
Right.
It seems so. I'm sort of waiting for those programmers to kind of catch up and basically be like, okay, let's just watch all this other stuff out and start over.
Right.
Because radio feels like it's really not reflective of what's happening now.
It doesn't. And I wonder, you know, at what point it will become obsolete or sort of not, if not obsolete, then like not still a primary benchmark that an artist, right, female or otherwise, needs to hit.
I feel like she's a part of a different generation that, yeah, is not concerned about radio play in the same way that, you know, any artist even a couple years ago would be. I don't really see her songs on the, like, as very radio friendly. I'm not sure if that
she
is.
She was on Khaled's The Remix for Talk. And I heard that, right, on the radio the other day, right?
That's,
but it
the
makes,
thing.
It, that would make sense. But Big Ol' Freak on the radio, like, is that what Megan needs or wants?
I don't, but I feel like in the South, maybe. Like, I, sure, you know, I don't have media-based data here with me. I didn't bring facts today, sorry. But I feel like I can hear songs of hers being on Southern, especially Southern rap, sure, radio. We haven't really talked about her Houston-ness.
Yeah.
So Houston City, that's very important to me personally. And I'm always very moved when people from that city get outside attention. In Lawrence's story, hello, Lawrence. In Baltimore right now. Sorry the timing didn't work out. In Lawrence's story, one of the things I did not know is that her, or the person who runs her label, I'm not sure if he's her manager, but the person who runs her label is T. Ferris. T. Ferris was the president of Swisha House, which did all the amazing music in the mid-2000s. So it's interesting to know that Houston is not just the place where she's from geographically, but also kind of like aesthetic, psycho-spiritually.
Yes.
One thing that Houston always had, people obviously identify it with Chopped and Screwed music and DJ Screw and Switch House, Michael Watts, etc. But there was always a very, very high degree of lyricism in Houston to the Ghetto Boys and various other early Rap-A-Lot projects. And I think if a rapper like this was going to come out of any Southern city or Southern tradition, it doesn't totally surprise me that it's from Houston.
Her mother, right, yeah, is like Hollywood, is like the trajectory she's coming from is very much inspired like that closely. The, wow, that was not a sentence of words that made
okay
sense. And
much of pop.
Sorry,
it, much of pop.
Oh, brother, sorry, it's like
totally okay.
4:45, and my brain has gone out the window.
No, I think I get what you're saying. That it's not only, what did you, psycho spiritual? Yeah, it's not only psycho spiritual. It's literal. Like her, right, mom came from that same legacy, and she's building upon it. But I also love that she actively lives in Houston, loves Houston, yeah, reps it all the time. Like the Houston hottie parties look
insane. Never have
insane.
I been so jealous in my life.
Yeah, seriously.
Her, I mean, I asked her about this actually. What does she like what does she love about Houston and what does she hate about Houston? And she was like, I don't hate anything about Houston. I like the hottie parties are the, like a family reunion in a way. And I really appreciate that because it's not, that's what you love to see. Also, I'm from Oklahoma, which is not really the South, but I just love anyone not from New York.
That was a nice tee up.
Yeah, that was okay.
That was, yeah, I mean, I think you see this also sort of in who she aligns herself with, like spiritually and on socials and stuff. You'll see her like post with Solange and sort of make a point of, you know, I think about Solange's most recent album, When I Get Home, which sort of was sonically Houston and sort of like aesthetically, mm-hmm, and vibe wise Houston in a way that some of her other work hasn't felt as in, mm-hmm, as clearly. And Megan sort of feels like that too. Like you listen to Fever and you know that that's where you're being sort of situated.
She's talking about Papados. Like, right, hello.
Yes. One thing that was missing from Lawrence's story is what did he order at Papado?
Oh, he said this on Twitter.
He said, well, he said he went to Papados, but he didn't say, did he say what he ordered?
I think I saw it on Twitter.
Was it crawfish?
I don't remember.
Was it the
HHI? I'm sorry. I told you, I can't remember tweets.
Okay. I would like to know from everybody listening who's been to Papados recently and what did you have? This is a very important question. I miss it a great deal. I have not been in a long time, but I would like to just get a sense from the audience, everybody's Papado's order. That's all. Just throwing that out there.
I will say, I do love Megan's lines about food. There's a line in Make a Bag, the song with Moneybagg Yo, on Tina Snow, where she says she's in Grand Lux eating Caesar salad with her sugar daddy, which is just like a perfect scene, a perfect vignette. Mm. Thank you for that. Mm. That's all I had to say.
You were talking about other artists that she aligns with or sort of has like a kind of like connection, mm-hmm, with. Obviously, there was this thing with Q-Tip that happened where, at least according to Lawrence's story, he had reached out and said that he was a big fan and then they were on Instagram or something together. So obviously that her music is speaking to someone from his generation and I know Tip pays attention to this stuff. That's important. Also, I wanted to talk about the freestyles.
Oh.
Ooh, ooh, wow. Ooh, both, yeah, at the same time. Ooh. Both, wait, at the, what, same time.
I literally have the lyrics up to one of them right now.
Please.
The Still Tippin'.
Yes.
Listen.
Which, of course, again.
The Danny Phantom line. took years off of my life. As someone who watched Danny Phantom after school, I said, listen, Nickelodeon should cut her check.
100%.
Okay, so we should listen to a little bit of that freestyle, some Stolte freestyle. Yes. He just want to
open me up and filet me. I told him eat that this show with no manners. He think I'm all just like I'm
Amanda. I want a nigga that eat it so good, I'm going to jump on my body like I'm Danny Phantom. At this table, there's only one person who's blessed enough to have been in the presence of Megan Thee Stallion, that's Hunter.
That's why I'm a hottie.
Okay, ooh. Don't rub it in. Stop rubbing it in. Talk to us about what she was like and about the conversation you had.
Actually, this is something that I only just remembering right now.
Recovered memories.
Yes. We were doing the photo shoot at the New York Magazine office, mm-hmm. and the photographer had... We were listening to her music before, sure. at her request, which I always think is the strong, best when someone look. Loves their own stuff to listen to it.
Absolutely.
And the photographer was like changing the setup and he put on this other like indie playlist and she walks back what? In and she's like, what in the coffee shop? That's when I was like, oh, we have no choice but to stand. Just like wow. decimated this guy and he like didn't wow. even get it. He was wow. like, oh, it's like, you know, Fleet Foxes. It was like... I'm sorry.
R.I.P. to that guy. R.I.P. to that guy. I hope he's had a good career because it's over.
Oh man, where do you even go from there?
You don't go many yeah. places. I no. think. No, but she is like the coolest, funniest, most precise person, and I think what we talked about earlier. I really appreciated that she was always. Like, she could tell me things that she was not doing well, that she's like, I want to do better. My facial expressions when I rap are not what I want them to be when I'm performing.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be able to just, like, figure out stage presence more, like, just mapping out her physicality, I think, mm-hmm. is something that's a goal of hers. But just being able to think that thoroughly about the work and about the experience of being at one of her shows, I thought was really, really impressive. Mm-hmm. For someone who's 24, who's only... been in this game for not very long, and it really speaks to how she really watched and admired her mother and how they could talk about rap in a different way than, you know,
yeah.
just like a normal parent child when you're kind of teaching them as you are growing up in this.
Well, I can
industry.
Only assume when you guys have children, you will speak to them about rap in this way. And I will, when I have children, I will speak to them about rap in this way. So, you know, I can only hope that when they grow up, they become either great rappers or great rap critics. We can only hope.
Duh.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, I've failed otherwise. But with that in mind, talking about this kind of generational knowledge passing, I wonder, or at least I feel like I don't know the answer to, is the thing that Megan does an outlier that we are all extremely excited about because it like tickles a thing for us that we're like, oh, yeah, that thing. We really like that thing. We miss that thing. Or is it indicative of some kind of, I don't want to say a seismic shift, but a little bit of the boat turning away from the kind of like improvisational bleep bloop free jazz away from the free jazz and towards bars again.
I think it's a little bit of both because there have not been enough successful women rappers for as long to be able to see this generational thing, to be able to see this being a craft passed down from mother to daughter, where we've seen that with fathers and sons, yep. you know, dozens of times. And
Diggy Simmons? No, I'm just playing.
Oh, bless me. Don't let him catch us.
Romeo?
Hey. Right, but no, there are so many examples, hey. Good and bad, for better or for worse, you know? And so
sorry.
I do feel like that in and of itself is sort of... the latter half of what you're talking about, like that is like the shift structurally, culturally.
That's the broader shift.
Yeah, is that we are able to see this play out and we've never been able to see that before. That mm-hmm. a daughter learning this from her mother. And also from a distinctly, you know, woman's perspective, her mom was she called her more of like a gangster rapper where she's like more sexy R&B rap. Mm-hmm. And I think that is so important that she inherited this skill, but still she's turning it on its head for her own benefit, for her own gaze. That to me is really powerful.
And she's able to do this and be talked about in a way where the defining thing of her craft isn't just her womanhood, right? Like Megan's delivery is different from Rico's, is different from
exactly.
Cardi's, is different
exactly.
from City Girls. And that space and that sort of expansiveness and that freedom is certainly like different from what we've ever seen before.
Free JT.
Oh, yeah. It's one
Sorry.
Of the first lines on mm-hmm. Reeler.
Yeah.
Which is the first.
Just important favorite. To say that. Shall we go out with Shake That?
Oh, great.
If you say so, yeah.
club and get it clapping and shit, bitch. Yeah. Ay. Ay. Yeah. Work.
That is our show. Thank you to Hannah Georges and Hunter Harris. Pedro's in the room today. Hi, Pedro. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us. I really do want to know about your Papa Do's order. I know that sounds strange, but I really would like to know. Podcast at nytimes.com. Please share and subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, yada, yada, yada. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Head Separate Media. We will be back next week. The best, me. He want to know how I move on a D. I want to eat like a Q. Why you a hun? She built like a P.